Welcome to the For the Church podcast, another great gospel-centered resource from Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary. My name is Jared Wilson, and I'm here today with my friend and regular podcast guest star, guest host, featured player. I don't know what we're supposed to call you. You're on too much to just be a regular or a normal, ordinary guest. And in fact, we're recording a couple episodes today. But you know who it is. It's Dr. Ronnie Martin. You like that? I put the doctor in there?
I do like that. And I actually like the word guest star. I like that.
Like it's that. Like, you know, in the olden days when you watch like The Love Boat or Fantasy Island and you get to the end. And those were the most important ones. That, I mean, there were the regular people, but then there was guest starring.
Guest starring Burt Reynolds.
Burt Reynolds. Lonnie Anderson.
Lonnie, of course. It's not going to be Love Boat without Lonnie.
And Ronnie J. Martin. He is. Ronnie Martin is director of leader care for the Harbor Network and not just a good friend of the podcast, a good friend of mine. And so we've got him on today to talk about the leader renewal, which is his specialty, in the way of what we're calling wisdom practices. I thought we would just jump right in, brother. We have seen in the last, well, we can see it every week. You could listen to this podcast every week and somebody could say we have seen a leader fall in the last couple of weeks, it feels like. Yeah. But certainly at the time of this recording, there's a couple of high profile in our camp or in our tribe that are kind of weighing on folks. And it just seems like every time this happens, for whatever reason, it could be a, sexual immorality. It could be financial impropriety. It could be bullying and domineering, departing from the faith, even things like that. It seems like every time this happens, everybody spends a few weeks in the aftermath, kind of wringing their hands, trying to figure out how did this happen? How do we keep this from happening? And obviously we don't know details for every single person. And that's not the point of this conversation. So there are things that are unique, I would think, and I would suspect for every one of these cases, but there are some things that can contribute to endurance, not just in the faith, but in ministry. And you and your wife, Melissa, also have really sort of invested this season of ministry into caring for pastors, for pastors' wives, for ministry leaders, in a way that looks to longevity. What are some things that you're seeing? Let's just talk about some stress fractures in contemporary ministry, modern ministry. You have a pretty good finger on the pulse of those things, I think, and speak to them pretty regularly. What are some things you're seeing that sort of complicate or pressurize ministry today that if left unchecked can down the road lead to significant fractures?
Yeah, I think one of the main things that kind of pops out when you ask that question is there just seems to be like this growing sort of fear about whether I'm going to be able to endure. In other words, it's almost like this anticipatory thing where it's you have men and women that are in ministry, and maybe it's church planters that are just coming in and they're just kind of experiencing what it means to be a lead pastor. And they got all the mayhem and the multitasking and all of the things that come with planting. And I think, on the heels of COVID and then, again, like what you just mentioned, when you see these sort of pillars of the faith that end up falling, and it just surfaces all of these questions related to trust. And then they're hearing, they're getting these questions asked to them by their congregations. And then they feel like, is this eroding the trust now that my congregation has, in me? And for good reason, it's, that would be a logical thing to be processing. But I think what I see more often than not now, especially with younger men, is almost this anticipation of the question, which is, will I be able to survive? Will I still be healthy in ministry 10 years from now, 20 years from now? is this something that I'm going to be able to continue to do? I remember we've talked about this when, you know, you get into ministry or you come to a new church and you're brought on as a pastor and your thought is, hey, I'm going to be here the rest of my life. I want to retire here. And that's a good thought. That's a good notion. It doesn't always happen for good and bad reasons. But I think now you're hearing more, am I even going to be able to be a pastor, you know, for the rest of my, you know, career? Is this what God has for me? And it is related. It seems like it's related to, I don't know that I'm going to be able to endure the things that I have seen the previous generation of pastors and leaders go through. Do I have that level of endurance? Do I have the stuff that I need to be able to get to that point? And I think there's a lot of fear for that.
Yeah. What's interesting is more and more younger leaders are just asking that question. I perceive that they're more interested in endurance. They're more interested in that question you asked, you know, will I persevere? Will I endure when, you know, when I was 20 years old, 21 years old, and, yeah, you know, I wasn't even thinking about that. Yeah, I was thinking about succeeding at what I was doing, you know, presently. And I might've been thinking about what the next thing might be, like what, you know, maybe the next ministry assignment or something, but I was not thinking about finishing well. And I certainly wasn't thinking about how to protect myself from, you know, from a ministry failing or anything like that. But I think, I mean, just in general, it feels like younger pastors, you know, they feel, or they seem pretty well, you know, clued into what it will take not to have an affair or something like that. You know, some will do that, but it just seems more in general, like, how do I, just under the weight of ministry, how do I carry this for decades and actually finish, you know, get to a ripe old age and say, I have fought the good fight, those sorts of things. Yeah. And one of the things that you do, particularly on social media that I notice, and I know you've put some of this stuff in print as well, but is you kind of touch on, I don't know what you'd call it, the humanization of the pastor, helping leaders remember that they are human, helping churches remember that their pastors are human. You know, you just had a couple of tweets in the last weeks of this recording that were, you know, pointing folks towards remembering that their leaders are human beings. Why is that? I mean, because it just seems like, well, of course, like, what else would we be? Well, why is that, given the modern sort of machinery of ministry and the modern landscape of churches, why is remembering that we are human beings, or why is that your, or one of your emphases right now?
Well, because I think, you know, I keep going back to this. It seems like the landscape changed, you know, after the pandemic. And there's been what you just described, I think, is there's sort of a almost like a realization of, hey, this is costly. You know, the ministry is costly to me as a person. And I think there's a heightened self-awareness of, hey, I have limitations. I cannot, you know, people coming at me with all of their thoughts and concerns and disagreements and, you know, political leanings and all of those things. And I think it was overwhelming for a lot of pastors, to where when they look out now, they're afraid of, you know, again, we're in a political season right now. They're afraid of more of that sort of avalanching upon them. And I think, to your point, what you said earlier, this sort of self-awareness of my limitations and my humanness, I think is a good thing. Obviously, let's do the qualification. It can be taken too far. But there is, I would say, there is more of an awareness of, hey, I can only do so much. And I think it was something that maybe has been lost on earlier generations that were just full steam ahead. Let's push into as many areas as we can. Let's overwork. Let's manage people in the best way that we know how. And we've seen the downside of what happens when that goes untethered. And so I think just seeing ourselves first, especially as leaders, as persons before pastors, is really important. And I think it's really important for us to let our people know that we see ourselves that way, and we really desire for them to see us that way, so that we can actually serve them. We can serve them as people better when they see us as people better, I would say. But it's a process. And I think it requires constant communication, and it requires sort of a give and take in the way that congregations understand their pastor. They don't idolize their pastor, but they also don't dehumanize their pastor, which is a form of idolization in some ways. But to keep those things in check in terms of an ongoing dialogue, I think is super important. But it's a process at the same time, you know?
Yeah. You know, I think one of the things that some congregations haven't quite evolved from, despite the fact that in a lot of churches today, kind of the modern, you know, evangelical church, we tend to see our pastors as sort of the specialized content provider. Yeah. And there may be less of an expectation in, at least in some of the churches that I, you know, used to serve in, there's less of an expectation that I'm going to know the pastor, the pastor's going to be in my house. You know, I'm going to have a personal relationship with the pastor, that sort of thing. But there's still this idea of the pastor as, you know, the service provider, the center of, you know, the giver of the ministry, while the church provides the need for the ministry.
Right.
And even if you know, don't expect a personal relationship with him, it's still easy to, unfortunately, see the pastor as less than a human being. And, you know, having to remind folks that, you know, the pastor is someone like you. You know, more often than not, he has a wife and children. More often than not, he has concerns about how he's going to pay his bills. He has concerns about, you know, the aging of his parents and his in-laws. And he's got all the same set of stressors, anxieties, worries that you do. And then just the ordinary baggage of being human, whatever that is, from his upbringing, from his, you know, his wiring personality. He's got all of that. Plus, he's thinking about this church that he's accountable for. He's thinking about how he's going to have to give an account before God for these people, that he's responsible for the spiritual growth, for the spiritual caretaking. So this isn't about like trying to create a special, you know, pity class for pastors that they're, you know, some special, you know, species.
Yeah.
In fact, what we're trying to say is just remember that they're human, that they are human like you. And, you know,
yeah, the opposite of self-pity would be greater understanding.
Yeah. Right?
So you don't want to create self-pity, because that is, that's asking something of your people. That's almost manipulative in a way, you know, so that's a form of manipulation. What we're trying to create between a congregation and a pastor, is a level of understanding that leads to an extension of grace and mercy that goes both ways. But I think what often happens is that assumptions start being made and projections start being made. And I'll say this to add to what we're saying. Now that social media is a part of the way that we present ourselves, a lot of people don't feel the need to dive in as deeply, because they're happy just to sort of look at your Instagram highlight reels and say, oh, that's who he is. And in fact, it's really not. It's a percentage of what he wants people to understand about, you know, the person he is, the things he likes, the family he has, the hobbies, you know, he's involved with, and all of those things. So I think that has even created another layer. And I saw that play out in my own life in some ways, but it created another layer to where it was like, hey, look, you know, you have to be intentional. You have to step towards me. You have to ask me questions. You have to be interested, in the same way that I have to do toward you, so that we can develop a level of deeper understanding for one another. Social media makes it really hard to do that, because you can get really lazy and make a lot of like crazy assumptions that in the end, they divide. They actually don't unify, you know?
So we've done some work here to kind of set up the problem. There's a lot more that we could say about this. But as we look to the antidote, or sort of a pathway forward for pastors themselves to sort of take personally and to own the, you know, the weight in a responsible and sustainable way, the weight of ministry in a responsible and sustainable way, and to look towards endurance, we have composed, in fact, you've largely composed, and I added a couple of things to it, a list of what you've called wisdom practices for pastors. And in fact, we have season two of our podcast, The Heart of Pastoring, which is also hosted here at Midwestern Seminary. For the church podcast listeners, if you're not aware, we have a second podcast. It's a seasonal podcast, so it's not out every week year round, but it's called The Heart of Pastoring with Ronnie and myself. Season one is already available. If you have not subscribed, we encourage you to go do that. And in fact, season two has already launched. It launched a week or two ago. And this season, we're talking about wisdom practices for pastors. I'm just going to read through our list. We have 12 wisdom practices, and then I'll just ask you to kind of speak to the idea behind the practices as a whole. So 12 wisdom practices, they are in no particular order. I guess I should stress that we just ordered them according to how we wanted to do the podcast episodes. They are prayer, silence, gratitude, Sabbath, discipleship, friendship, reading, exercise, scripture, recreation, encouragement, and service. The 12 wisdom practices. Ronnie, what was the sort of idea or the vision behind? Because some of these, you know, obviously overlap with like the spiritual disciplines.
Oh, yeah.
We could have done an episode on the spiritual disciplines or a season on the spiritual disciplines. We can talk about the qualifications for ministry, 1 Timothy 3, Titus 1, et cetera. What's the vision behind wisdom practices, this list of 12 concepts that in some ways encompass those things, but are also somewhat larger than those things?
Yeah, I think it's a big overlap. Discipline is such an unmusical word.
Okay.
You know? And I think, you know, I think when I hear the word disciplines, and it's good and it's true, and, you know, we think about spiritual disciplines, I prefer the word practices because it feels much more it feels less like a drudgery and more like something that we you know, and again, this is a matter of, you know, how we define and determine these words and how they've affected us. But I like the word practices because it to me, it's just, what is our daily lives? What do they look like? They're going to be made up of something. And we put all kinds of different practices into play on a daily basis when it comes to every aspect of our life. And so when we think of, hey, what is it look like to be somebody who is growing closer to Jesus? Well, there has to be some things that we do in order to, you know, along with the help of the Holy Spirit and our sanctification, to grow in the grace that you know, gets us closer in our affection with Jesus Christ. And so what would those things be that we can just apply to our lives in varying percentages at different places, things that fit our personalities and our seasons and our careers? What are those things that we can do in order to apply things that the Bible actually teaches us to do from a wisdom perspective that in the end just simply get us closer to the heart of Jesus? And so it's not reinventing anything. It's just saying, hey, there's a conversation going right now for a lot of people in regards to spiritual formation. And let's talk, you know, and let's keep it simple. And let's not add to people's burdens when we talk about practices, but just say, hey, this is what the Bible has presented us with in terms of how we think about what it means to live a life that is growing nearer to Christ in everything that we do. And so I think that was just a really simple, non-inventive concept behind it, you know?
Well, you know, to your point, you said, you know, we don't want to add to burden. Somebody could look at this list and be like, man, 12 things I've got to, you know, but what's the purpose of even the spiritual disciplines of things like prayer and, you know, Bible intake and, you know, fasting, things like that? The purpose of those ideally is not that we become super religious people, but that they actually free us up, you know, in the same way that the discipline of physical fitness or what have you, it's difficult in the training, but that is designed actually to liberate you from what a lack of training will you know, result in.
It removes a bigger burden, right? These are ultimately meant to remove a bigger burden.
Yeah. And so these practices, as you said, also into the heart of Jesus, like, you know, if you think about you know, Christ, God incarnate. So God in the flesh, he's a human being and multifaceted. And so we should expect that there would be multiple angles from which to, you know, sort of see the, you know, the heart of Christ in the work of ministry. And, you know, these 12, you know, rhythms, practices, whatever we want to call them, they're really designed to not just invest in our own sustainability in ministry and endurance in ministry and finishing well in ministry, but also just our, in a sense, regular offloading of the things that we need to offload onto Jesus. Yeah. I think of how, you know, some of these, if you just ask somebody, hey, what are the, you know, practices that pastors should adopt as a regular discipline, a regular rhythm? They're going to say prayer, which we have on here. They're going to say scripture reading, which we have on here. They'll probably say some form of rest. We have Sabbath as a wisdom practice, but you may be, it may not be that people put silence as a regular rhythm or recreation as a regular rhythm. Or even things like reading or friendship. I think every pastor realizes in some ways that that they need friends, whether they have them or not. So if you don't have them, you especially realize that you need them. Yeah. But do they think of that as a wisdom practice? So our approach to these things is designed not to just say, hey, in addition to those spiritual disciplines, pastor, here's some more stuff you got to worry about or think about. But here are some healthy, you know, healthy practices that, you know, help you embody the person that Jesus wants you to be and invest in a long-term ministry. There's a couple that I want to talk about in the time that we have left, maybe a little more specifically that feel a little unique. First of all, I should mention that we have a special episode in the middle of the season coming up. So we'll get about halfway through the rhythms. And then there's a special episode with our wives. Our wives join us for an episode. Things go a little off the rails in that episode. It was crazy. Fun one. It got a little, it got interesting, but we got some wisdom from our wives and then also some wisdom, you know, practices that they appreciate or have appreciated from us. And so as pastors and ministry leaders, you know, listen to this new season, that may be an episode that, you know, you can listen to with your spouse as well. Let me ask you about the wisdom practice of friendship. Why don't more pastors have friends?
Well, pastors are in such an unusual situation where, you know, they have congregations that are under their care. And so that's a wide group of people. That's a wide pool of people, which would probably encompass the availability of who they have to form friendships with, right? Because you only have so many people in your life. And if your job and your vocation is to do life and to care for a large group of people, by virtue of that, you would, you know, your friends are probably going to come out of that pool of people. And then I think what's so difficult about it is that it's hard to create that dividing line with people in your congregation, which is, hey, are you my pastor right now? Are you my friend right now? Are you always looking to probe into the inner depths of my soul? Or can we just talk about the game, you know? And so it can be a really, I would say it can be a really complicated relationship. And what happens is if it ever goes south, which it does very often, right? Because pastors, no matter who they're friends with in the congregation, they also have to pastor those people. And when it goes bad, what can happen is then the friendship takes a hit and things can go sour. So what that does then for a pastor is it makes them very friend cautious and friendship cautious. And they can become, after they've experienced some downsides to friendships in the congregation, they can just sort of pull back so far that it's not worth the risk anymore in their minds to pursue those kinds of friendships. And so you just get yourself into a place where this is something that's wise to pursue. You also have to be full of wisdom as you pursue it. You also got to pray that the Lord would give you courage to say, hey, sometimes friendships are just seasonal. Sometimes friendships go bad And we need God's grace to sustain us through those times. But we would say it still is a good practice to pursue friendships, even knowing that those things are, you know, you're susceptible to those things and they hang in the balance.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned the person who's wondering if the pastor is going to be probing, is going to be spiritually invasive, et cetera. And that makes friendship fraught. I experience it so often the other way, where I'm wondering if I'm being evaluated. It's hard for me with folks when I'm wondering, you know, do I need to put the pastor hat on? Is that what they're expecting? Or can I just be myself? Yeah. Can I, you know, are you somebody that I can kind of, you know, that I can breathe around, that I can, you know, unsuck my gut around? Or are you somebody that you're really evaluating me? You're comparing me to your previous pastor. You're comparing me to some celebrity pastor you really like. And there are those folks that just, they seem a little evaluative.
Yeah, for sure.
And they just put me on edge a little bit. Let's talk about really quick recreation, which when you sent the original list for our podcast out for our season outline, I wondered what the difference between exercise and recreation was. Because I tend to think of them sort of bunched up together. And sometimes I guess they are, but we separated those out.
Yeah, yeah.
How is recreation different from exercise, and what's the purpose of recreation in the pastor's life?
Well, I think, you know, they definitely overlap, because you can exercise for recreation, of course. We talked about that on the pod. I think one of the qualitative differences is that you really are going after a goal a lot of times when you exercise. You know, you're waking up early in the morning, you're doing CrossFit, you're telling everybody in the world that you just CrossFitted, you know, and, but it's for this, it's for the express purpose of, you know, expanding, you know, your health. And, but recreation is one of those activities of which you're not trying to produce anything. You're not trying to accomplish anything. You're just simply enjoying something that is fun for you, that gives you a lot of life, and you partake of it as a way to, again, enjoy the blessings and the gifts that God gives us in all these different areas that fall under that category of recreation. So I would say exercise can be something where we're trying to produce and accomplish. Recreation is just pure enjoyment and something that lightens our heart and gives our mind a rest, you know, from all the burdens and the troubles.
That's great. The wisdom practices, again, are prayer, silence, gratitude, Sabbath, discipleship, friendship, reading, exercise, scripture, recreation, encouragement, and service. And if you're interested in a weekly journey through these wisdom practices for the next 2.5 or so months, join Ronnie Martin and I for The Heart of Pastoring Season 2. The first episodes are already out. You can find The Heart of Pastoring wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify. You can listen right off the web at the For the Church website, ftc.co. Just click on podcasts and you'll see your two choices there. We'd love to have you join us for this journey. Brother Ronnie, thanks so much for joining me, man.
Man, it's always the best.
If you enjoyed this podcast, dear listener, give us a good review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. And until next time, may Jesus be big in your church. You've been listening to the For the Church podcast, hosted by Jared Wilson, found online at ftc.co. This resource is brought to you by Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary in Kansas City, Missouri, where we train leaders for the church.